Novelist Jonathan Coe has this to say about Christopher Miller's debut novel, Sudden Noises from Inanimate Objects. Funny, sinister, and endlessly inventive. What Nabokov did for poetry in Pale Fire and John Lanchester did for food in The Debt to Pleasure, Christopher Miller has now done for music in this demonically sly little novel. As Christopher Miller admits, his demonically sly little novel takes a rather unusual form.
Yeah, it's written in the form of liner notes to the complete works of an eccentric 20th century composer. I was thinking of those fat booklets of liner notes you sometimes get with box sets or opera recordings. And in one edition of the book, there was a Dutch translation. For some reason, they actually did it in that format, 5 inches square or whatever that would be.
It sounds wonderful, but it's so odd. It's not an idea that clearly has inspired others. And I wondered what inspired you. Were you just reading a set of liner notes and it suddenly occurred to you you could tell a story that way?
Well, I've always liked reading liner notes, especially when I lose interest in the music I'm listening to. As a writer, I relate more readily to words than to musical notes. The main character, the eccentric composer, started off as a minor character in another book I was writing, another novel that I abandoned. And I just had so much stuff about this composer. He was just one of those characters where I could put him in any situation and I'd know exactly how he would behave. He just generated all sorts of comic action, but it wasn't really connected by any sort of through plot. So I was casting around for a way to relate all these little fragments, all these little notes, and liner notes just occurred to me as a great way for a bunch of separate anecdotes instead of pretending that I had a linear story to tell when I didn't really.
Well, he's a fascinating character, too, and he is particularly appropriate for bits and pieces, for anecdotes. Simon Silber, you call him. I'm assuming that's the way it's pronounced.
Yes, yes.
He seems both completely odd and in some vague ways familiar. I mean, there are things about him that sound like Glenn Gould or John Cage, composers whose names are known without necessarily their music being very well known.
Glenn Gould was really the model for him, and maybe not so much for his compositions, but just for his eccentric personality, his shyness. Gould famously retired from the concert stage when he was 30, I think, his reclusiveness. I had just been reading a biography of Gould and just got really interested in that character and started creating this composer character who was sort of based on him. He was supposed to be like Glenn Gould, but not quite as good, so silver instead of gold.
Of course, the other main character in this book is the person who's telling the story, who's writing these liner notes, with a really lovely name, I have to say, Norman Fairweather Jr.
Yeah. Silver's Fairweather friend.
Yes. I was hoping it was that obvious, yeah.
And the junior is important, too, because he has an inferiority complex. His father is a famous scholar. It's partly rebelling against the status quo, which has glorified his father, that leads Fairweather to this obscure, marginal composer.
Of course, what's always fascinating about writing of this sort is that it reveals as much about the writer as about the subject, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it does. And I feel that both of those characters are sort of funhouse mirror reflections of myself. I'm obviously a nicer, saner guy than either of them, but
well, of course.
They're both partly based on me.
Yeah. Norman Fairweather considers himself a creative type, something of a philosopher. Some of his aphorisms, and he writes a book of aphorisms, I think, some of them are really very clever, and some of them, well, they border on the trite, shall we say?
Yes, trite and the sort of mechanical or gimmicky. All A is B, but it's all BA. Things like that, just kind of facile wordplay.
The famous one, I think, is some people shudder to think and some think in order to shudder.
Right, right.
It's lovely in a way, but then you look at it and you think, yeah.
You could see how a very vain and grandiose aphorist could convince himself that aphorism concealed depths of profundity, though obviously it doesn't.
Now, would you say the same thing about Simon? Is that what he would think or perhaps say of his own music, this wonderful stuff that no one else can do?
Yes, I think they both have delusions of grandeur. For some reason, I find those delusions endearing, I think because I have them myself. That people with no such delusions, people who are completely realistic about their talent and their prospects, are usually kind of depressing.
Well, I think that's why reading the book is so much fun, because you can't help but laugh a little at yourself, too, as you're going along.
Right, even as you feel superior to the characters because they're so crazy.
Yeah. Would you read a little bit of Sudden Noises? Because I think it would be great to get a little of the flavor of it at this point and how you feel about it.
Okay, I'm going to read a passage that's a favorite of mine. It describes a convention of the New Composers Alliance, which is just a dozen obscure composers who all gather in Forest City, Silverstown. And this just sort of describes some of them and their work. The New Composers Alliance wasn't a movement or school, as far as I could tell. In fact, the only thing that our composer had in common with his fellow members was a lack of interest in all music but his own, including that of fellow members. Otherwise, they were a motley bunch. Altschul, who had just finished the 30-year task of composing a different suite of miniatures for every interjection in Webster's, 24 ahs, 24 ahas, 24 ahems, 24 ahoys, 24 alacks, 24 alasses, 24 amens, etc. Batcock, whose instrumental works incorporated laugh tracks every time the music did something humorous, though I, for one, have always been skeptical about claims of humor in instrumental music, like claims of flavor in cigarette ads. Cowlick, who for years had confined himself to the note of middle C, not just the key, but the note, varying only the volume, duration, and instrumentation. Earlywine, who kept developing new instruments with names like the trombonium, the pseudobassoon, and the acoustic synthesizer, in order to be the first composer to write music for them. Goodenough, whose music involved so much repetition and so many formulas for rapid expansion of shorthand notations, that he was able, with the aid of a computer program of his own devising, to write music in less time than it took to hear, to write a fully orchestrated 30-minute tone poem in 15, for instance. Pilcrow, who, congenitally deaf, wrote only Augenmusik, music meant to be seen and not heard, and Webb, like Silber, better known as a performer, though unlike Silber, he was still performing, and presumably, like any serious musician, practicing several hours a day, every day, on his chosen instrument, the gong.
I can hear you smile as you read. it must have given you great joy to come up with these things that don't exist.
I had a lot of fun. It's probably my favorite part of writing is, as you say, coming up with things that don't exist. And I usually wind up with more than I can actually fit in the final book.
I'm just curious. Are there any recordings that you had in mind that sound the way you think a Simon Silber composition might sound?
As I say, he's sort of based on Glenn Gould, and I think that like Gould, he hums or sings along on some of his recordings. I was actually thinking of Robert Schumann and his suites of miniatures. Silber writes only for piano because he doesn't want anyone else to perform his music, and he's a pianist. Very short pieces that are almost closer to aphorisms than to full-length works of music. So pieces like Kinderscenen, Scenes from Childhood, was the model for Silber's Variations in a Minor. Schumann wrote a bunch of those suites, and they're actually what he was best at. He also wrote symphonies and quartets because back then composers felt they had to be taken seriously, but he was really best at these miniatures. Another composer would be John Cage. I have one record, I forget what it's called, but he just laid music paper over a star chart for like the stars visible in the Australian skies and just wrote a note wherever there was a star. So I had that in mind for Silber's composition Crows, where he just transcribes the birds on the telephone wires.
Listening to that music, you can almost hear both Simon Silber and Norman Fairweather, can't you?
Yes. They're both aphorists and both cranks, I would say.
I'm curious to know what you think about the future of the novel. Do you think that the novel has to continue to evolve to compete with our ever-evolving mediascape, TV, films, video games, the internet?
I feel like the big competition now is with the internet, just because I'm so addicted to it myself. And I used to scandalize my colleagues at Bennington by saying I decided that the internet was better than literature, which I don't really believe, but it was a fun thing to say.
A good conversation starter, or
yes.
A good harangue starter, I'm not sure which.
Or conversation ender, as the case may be. I'm really trying to detox from the internet because I've gotten so addicted. And I think if you spend too much time on it, fiction starts to seem slow moving. And, you know, you want hyperlinks. You want to be able to click on the page and be somewhere else suddenly. I mean, I think that actually my take on fiction is kind of similar to that. You know, I always like to have a lot of things going on the page. I used to say that I have a sort of three-ring circus aesthetic. It's funny, but with this novel writing now, one of the injunctions I've been giving myself is make it as fun as the internet. I don't know if that's possible, and I don't know if it's wise. I mean, I don't want to feel that that novelists are selling their birthright by trying to copy the internet. Yeah. The way painters for a while tried to paint as realistically as possible to compete with photography. You just can't do it. You have to find out what your own medium is good for.
Christopher Miller is the author of Sudden Noises from Inanimate Objects, a novel in liner notes. Miller's also written another very funny and inventive novel called The Cardboard Universe, A Guide to the World of Phoebus K. Dank. It's written in the form of an encyclopedic reader's guide to the life and work of a fictional author who bears a certain resemblance to the legendary science fiction writer, Philip K. Dick.